Good to talk to you again, Rich.
Always good to have you on. This is it's a summer tradition. I think this is our fourth summer in a row talking with you.
Fantastic. I like this tradition.
I love this tradition. Absolutely. How's your summer been going?
Very good. I was in Kansas City, Missouri, having a nice time there, doing a couple of shows, and happy to be back. It was really hot there, and unfortunately, it was a winter Christmas show, so we had on wool caps and several layers of jacket and down-filled vests and what have you. And it was 100 degrees out.
And you have to make it look like you're chilly, right?
Exactly.
That must be for the Hallmark movie. What is it, A Chief's Love Story?
I hit mute by accident. Very good. You know your stuff, Rich.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. Stephen Tobolowsky is a wonderful friend of the show, and he did a Hallmark movie a couple of years ago, and I told him, you know, that it's going to go well, and you're going to be there for life. Every year they'll call you, and he's done two in a row of those Hallmark Christmas movies, and I think they filmed in Salt Lake City in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, kind of the same thing.
You've also got a movie coming out. I watched the trailer this morning. Strange
Darling. Really good. It's a crime thriller, and it's very good. How is my sound on your end, by the way?
You sound fantastic. Sounds like you're right here in the room.
I got a nice mic. I went and got myself a nice mic.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Trying to be like you.
Yeah, look at that. That's great. The movie looks great. Strange Darling, working with the wonderful Barbara Hershey.
Yeah, she's incredible. I've only had to wait 47 years to work with that gifted woman, but worth the wait.
Well, I have to get in a plug for your products. Begley's Best. I'm a big fan. Use your stain and odor remover all the time. And then just this week, my dog Ginger enjoyed the waterless pet shampoo. We love the Begley's Best products.
It's so nice to try it, Rich. They really work well. You know, it's something I wanted to do from the earliest age. You know, I used to use vinegar and water to clean up, or baking soda, and that stuff works fine, but you want something to do a little better job than that for a lot of cleaning situations, and certainly to shampoo your pets. You don't want to use anything toxic, but you want it to work and keep your pet clean. So we've got great products that are good for the pets and good for the humans, and it's good to do something like that and make it available to people.
Well, I think next on my list, I've got to get myself some of that hardwood floor cleaner. That looks great, too.
I'm going to make sure you get some of that. I'll talk to Anthony Turk, and he's the kind of guy that can make that happen with a little help from me.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate it. And again, I'm not just saying it because you're on, but I've been using the products for a couple of years now, and they're terrific. I can't recommend them highly enough.
You're a pal. Yeah, they got them at some Costco store. So tell your Costco store, if they don't carry it, to give it a try. And you can get them on Amazon and get them at Walmart and lots of other places.
I see you're a TikTok sensation now, too, with your daughter, Hayden.
Thanks to Hayden. Yeah, she's very good with that stuff. You know, I'm a geezer. I know how to do very limited things. I can barely post on a few social media, you know, platforms. But she really knows her stuff, and she's had millions of views. I ran into the very clean glass there, the glass door at Apple, about a month or two ago now, and it was pretty funny at the time, but she got like 30 million views out of it or something.
We're talking with Ed Begley here on Downtown. I went back and reread your book. Look, there it is right there. I love the book. It's a wonderful memoir, To the Temple of Tranquility, and Step on It. It's such a great read. And when I was reading it, I was thinking about something that a director told me once, and he was talking about what he looks for in actors. And he always talked, and I do this with my high school actors that I work with. He talked about the three A's: ability, affability, and availability. And obviously the ability is there and it's a given, but you've made it a habit in your career of being somebody who shows up not just on time, but early, and is always there to get along with and support your fellow actors.
I figured out early on that I was never going to be the kind of a level of the great actors of my time, you know, the Peter O'Toole and the, you know, the Anthony Hopkins, great actors. I just didn't have those kinds of skills. I hadn't trained at RADA. I didn't have that kind of training. I suppose I could have if I had applied myself, but I hadn't done that. But what I could do was show up on time and make everybody in every department to make their jobs easier within the parameters of doing my job and being a character that's compelling to watch and to listen to. Having accomplished that, if any way I could make the sound guy's job easier, the first assistant director's job easier, with simple things that were asked of me and some that weren't even asked of me, to just do those things to always show up, not just on time, but usually about a half hour early, because sometimes they get ahead of things. Oh my God, I wish we had Ed here. We could start on that. So, wait, he's here already. Fantastic. Get him in the makeup and get him on set. We'll get that shot that we had hoped we'd get. Fantastic. And they remember that stuff the same way actors talk. I didn't like working with that director. I love that producer. That guy was great. That guy was terrible. They believe me. They talk amongst themselves too, the directors and the producers and the studio heads and the network executives. And if you make their life miserable without any real purpose, not that there's any proper purpose to making somebody's life miserable, but you know, the people that ask more of others who are extremely talented, they ask more of different departments than I perhaps might ask, but they're entitled to do so because they're doing a level of craft that's beyond my scope. But if I can do my simple job and to make their life easier in the bargain, turns out they remember that.
We were talking not too long ago with Barry Livingston, and I think it was My Three Sons that was your first acting job, right?
It was. What a dear man he is. I'm still in touch with him, and I'm happy to have him in my life since 1967. My God. Dear guy, and he's still out there doing lots of stuff in show business, and lived in Laurel Canyon for years. I used to stop there and occasionally get a top off of my electric car when I was running low years ago. I just love hearing from Stanley. He's a great, great guy.
Speaking of your area, did you feel a little of the rumble yesterday?
None of it. My daughter, Amanda, lives in Las Feliz, so she felt it pretty good. You know, I wondered what she was talking about. I didn't feel a thing. What are you talking about? But it was quite strong there because that was the epicenter. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, miles off the coast or something. It was right near her neighborhood there, very close to it. And so she felt it pretty good. I did not even feel it.
Ed, can you talk a little bit about Alan Watts and his influence on you?
You know, I was a guy back in the 70s and before that, who was always trying to get somewhere else, trying to always, you know, get to the better party, get the better job. I was, you know, waiting for things to happen later. It was going to be great when, you know, fill in the blank, when I got the first acting job, got into Screen Actors Guild, it was going to be great. And somehow that didn't fully satisfy me. It's going to be great when I got a job in a TV series as a regular. And I got that, but that didn't fully satisfy me. And I quickly realized that I was always waiting for things to happen later, when in fact they're happening right now, as it's happening with you and I on these microphones, talking to each other and visiting again, enjoying what we enjoy together, a fine conversation. You know, and Alan Watts' book, This Is It, kind of sums it up. This is it, Rich. It's not happening later. This moment with you right now, this one, is perfectly sublime if I let it be. I have everything that I need. I've already eaten today. I'm clothed. I'm sheltered. I have those things that not everybody has. So if I've been able to get those things for myself, my family, I think my obligation is to help others that don't have those things, food, clothing, shelter, to get that too. And that's what we're, I think, intended to do with our time now, to get ourselves secure and our family secure, then to help others. And that's what turns out to give me the most joy. It's not really winning an award, or those moments can be joyous, but they're not the be all and end all of one's happiness. You know, I started to actually enjoy not just being up at Big Sur, sitting zazen on a tatami mat, but to actually just be in line at the DMV and to remember that it was happening right there too. To be sitting at 6th and La Brea with no particularly good music on the radio or no good talk show or anything on, and just realize, wow, this is it right now here too, at this kind of humdrum intersection. You know, there's nothing particularly good or bad happening, but it's sublime if I let it be. And that title of the book that Alan Watts wrote called This Is It sums it up. This is it. It's right now. It's not later.
Boy, if you can feel sublime at the DMV, that's a level of inner peace I think we should all strive for.
Exactly. That's what I realized. I was finding not pure happiness. A few things are pure, but I would be more serene up at Big Sur or at Tassajara or wherever I was going to meditate or do whatever I did. But I went, wait, it's not separate. My time in line at the DMV or at the 10 items or less aisle, you know, when somebody has 20 items, that I should be able to practice the same serenity there. And I sought to do that. And it turns out you can do that as well. You can find joy in the mundane, as Alan Watts talks about. It's not separate. It's not some separate time. Okay, I'm going to be serene now. Now I'm going to go back to getting food for my family and doing all this. Now I'll be serene again. Everything that you do, you should find some measure of serenity, and you don't have to get enlightened. I'm going to find enlightenment. I was chasing after it. I'm going to get enlightened. We are already enlightened. We just have to open our hearts and our minds and our souls and our being to it, and we will realize that we are already enlightened. We're in the moment. This one, here it comes again, Rich. We have every single thing that we need.
Has that become easier for you as you get older?
It has. I was not so good at it in the early 70s. I got better in the mid 70s. Unfortunately, I tried to have to chemically induce more serenity, to find serenity in a bottle of Stolichnaya, and I don't recommend that, or with pills or, you know, other, you know, chemical reactions. I don't recommend that at all. It can work temporarily. You can find, you can be kind of anesthetized, I suppose. That's a feeling that's similar to serenity to some. And it, perhaps it was to me, but it wasn't pure, because, and it had a horrible price tag. For every, you know, moment of serenity that you had, you had hours of serenity twitching on the floor, you know, coming off drugs or coming off, you know, alcohol, having had the DTs and what have you. It was never worth the price of admission. So I tried to find it in sobriety and did. I got sober in 1979. I've remained sober ever since, and it's much better that way, I can tell you.
Ed Begley with us here on Downtown. I don't think in all the times you've been on, we've talked about your experience being directed by Jack Nicholson on Going South. What was that like for you?
Jack had been a dear friend since 1972. I met him with a mutual friend, Harry Giddes, who introduced me to everybody that I knew that I wanted to know in Hollywood. Buck Henry, Cass Elliott, Jack Nicholson, Michelle Phillips, all these great people I met at Harry Giddes' house. And I met Harry through the great Cindy Williams, the actress who was in not only Laverne and Shirley in our television, you know, in our TV rooms, but also Travels with My Aunt, The Conversation, American Graffiti. She was a wonderful film actress as well. She was my friend from the San Fernando Valley. We had been on Room 222 together, met at a Christmas party, and I was in love with Cindy. I wanted to marry her, but fortunately for her, she had some pretty strict rules about dating a practicing alcoholic. And so that never happened with she and I, but I got a great deal out of it because I was friendly with her, her whole wonderful life, remained very close to her children, Zach and Emily. And so I'm blessed to have known her, and I met Harry Giddes through her, and in turn met all those people I mentioned. And not just because they're famous, also highly skilled people that were at the top of their game, you know, in those years. And I got to be around that, people I so admired, and they helped me get better at what I did. And I'm just still blessed to know the many that are still around.
We always love to talk about Harry Nilsson. I'm a huge fan, and we've talked about him with the friends of his like Jimmy Webb and, oh my goodness, everybody who was in that group, Jerry Beckley of America back in the day, and Mickey Dolenz and more. You were great friends with Harry, and you even learned, you explain in the book, his trick of being able to take any date and tell someone what day of the week it was.
That's correct. He taught me that little calendar trick, and I did it for a while, and it was a great deal of fun. And I love Harry Nilsson. What a great songwriter. I met Ringo Starr through him. I met the Monty Python gang through him. You know, I just was blessed to know him. And I used to hear from Una, his wonderful widow, for a while, but I haven't heard from her in a while, and I hope I hear from her. I got to reach out and see if I can find Una, because she's a wonderful part of his life and his wonderful kids. I've occasionally contacted them on social media, and I just think the world of Harry Nilsson still. He's a great, great guy.
We lost one of your very talented friends recently, Dabney Coleman.
He and I were very, very close. I met him on Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman, back in the early and mid 70s. And I went, what is this guy doing? He's doing something different in comedy than anybody else. He wasn't playing it for laughs. Hey, I'll tell you, these people, she's so old, blah, blah, fill in the blank. I he wasn't doing that at all. He was doing comedy the way one would do Strindberg. He was just playing it not for laughs, playing it seriously and straight, in total character. And boy, was it compelling to watch, and boy, was it funny, you know, Buffalo Bill and Slap Maxwell and Nine to Five and On Golden Pond, and anything that he did was always brilliant. So I wanted to be Dabney Coleman. I wanted to be around him, and he was gracious enough to allow me into his inner circle, and we were friends throughout his wonderful life, and I'm all the better for it.
Am I right, Ed, from both your book and what I've observed through the years, that you are drawn to strong women, both in your romantic life, but also in your professional, in your friendships? What is it about strong women that makes you gravitate to them, and vice versa?
Well, I got lucky. I had some very important strong women in my life when I was quite young. Pardon me. My sister and I, Aline, were headed in a bad direction when we were young, because our mother died when we were 7. We thought she was our mother. She was our mother, but our stepmother, not what we were led to believe, our adoptive mother. And so, but she was quite sick and died when we were 7. So we were often left without proper care. And then fortunately, somehow my dad got smarter, luckier, both, and found this woman, Jeanette Pierre from Alsace-Lorraine. And she had lived through the, you know, the Nazi period there in the 30s and 40s. And she was just a wonderful, strong, ethical woman. And so we had her in our lives, and she was strict but fair. And she got us headed in the right direction, my sister Aline and I. And I fortunately had a lot of other women like that in my life. My first wife, Ingrid, was fantastic. My current wife, Rochelle, is just fantastic beyond words in every way. I'm just lucky to have women like this that are part of my life. And my sister Aline, I'm still quite close to, of course. I'm in touch with her all the time.
And how are those grandkids of yours doing?
I've got 3 wonderful grandkids. I've got Ellison, who's going to be 21 very soon. I've got River, who's 16, and Ari, who's 3. And they're just wonderful kids. Like, my 3 grown children are 46, 45, and 24. I've got 3 incredible kids and 3 incredible grandkids. So I'm just 6 times blessed, Rich.
Well, it's so great to talk with you. So glad that we've got upcoming work to see from you. Would you have imagined back in the mid-60s or even the 70s that you would not just be working at this point in your life, but that you would still be in high demand?
I had no idea I'd still be working at age 74. Very soon, in a few days, 75. So, and to be working with people like Mitch Hurwitz on Arrested Development, to work with people, you know, the incredible people, Steve Millar on Young Sheldon, and, you know, Better Call Saul, Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould and those people, Bob Odenkirk, my God, how lucky am I? I just seem to keep working. And I just did a movie. Well, it was a couple of years we did it now, and it's finally coming out, called Strange Darling with J.T. Mulner. You're going to hear a lot more about this movie. It's an incredible film. It's a crime thriller, and it's like nothing you've ever seen. It really is. Best movie I've been part of for years and years, and I'm proud to be part of it.
We're looking forward to that. That comes out, I believe, on the 23rd of August. In the meantime, yep. Ed, thanks so much as always. Wish you a happy birthday in advance. The 75 coming up, how'd that happen so soon?
I'm shocked. Believe me, no one's more shocked than me. I live to be 75.
Well, we're hoping for a lot more than that, and always a treat. It makes our summer to catch up with you every year. So, as always, we appreciate you, Ed. Thanks so much.
Right back at you, Rich. Good to see you, pal.
That's great. Thanks again, Ed.
Thank you so much, Rich.
You bet.
I hope I see you again soon. I know I will.
You got it. Be well.
Thank you, brother.
Bye-bye now.
Recording.